This episode contains graphic descriptions of violence. Please take care while listening. Previously on Stolen, Trouble in Sweetwater.
Rumors in Shiprock are the guy that got shot, somebody retaliated and is the one that did something to my sister.
Are you worried for your own safety?
Oh yeah, I've received threats.
And I don't know then if you can tell us anything about Evan Begay.
Do you know where he's at?
I was like, where is this guy? He's hiding from something.
I didn't expect our investigation into Christina Carrillo's disappearance to lead to so many questions about her son, Evan Begay, and a shooting he was involved in not long before she went missing that left Christina injured and her boyfriend, Wyatt Begay, dead. I haven't been able to talk to Evan directly, but one day, while I'm in New Mexico, I get an unexpected phone call from someone who was not only there the day of the shooting, but who was also a witness to so much of what happened in Christina's life.
I got to know Christina back, way back in the day. She's been here with me for about 8 or 10 years. She lived with me.
It's Melvin Lee. I've been trying to get in touch with him and haven't had much luck. But I sent my number to him through one of his friends, and he calls me out of the blue.
And how did you get to know Christina?
I got to know Christina through her mom.
And what was your guys' relationship like?
Well, a good relationship. She was like a stepdaughter to me.
Melvin says Christina was like a stepdaughter to him, and he tried to look out for her.
I gave her a place to stay, so she had her own bedroom to stay in. I worry about her a lot.
How come?
I was worried about her getting hurt or her ending up missing like she is now.
Like you thought that might happen to her?
Yes, I told her to stay home. You know what's going on out there.
And do you think, like, she felt safe at your house?
Yes, she did.
Melvin encouraged Christina to stay home, but he says it wasn't uncommon for her to leave for days at a time. He wasn't sure where she went or what she did, but she always came back.
When was the last time that you talked to Christina?
The day she left. I was sitting in the dining room. They were in the living room arguing.
Did you guys argue? Were you arguing with Christina?
No. I wasn't arguing with her. She got an argument with her mom that day.
Christina's mom, Laverne, told us that Melvin and Christina were arguing. But Melvin says Christina was mad at Laverne, not him.
After she went in the bedroom, she calmed down. She came back out. And she kissed me on my forehead. Told me, I love you, Melvin. And she walked out.
And so they were arguing, and then Christina came and said goodbye to you before she left?
Yes, she kissed me on the forehead, said, I love you, Melvin, and she left. That's the last time I seen her.
Melvin says he waited inside for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then he went out looking for Christina.
I don't know which way she went. I didn't see her footprints anywhere. Trying to call her, she wouldn't answer.
Did Christina come back at all after the argument? Did she come back to your house?
No, she never came back. I haven't seen her since the day she left. Up to this day, I haven't seen her or heard from her.
Melvin says he knows there are rumors circulating about what happened to Christina and that people are talking about him.
I know they're blaming me, but they can blame me for all they want, but hey. I learned to deal with her disappearance. I don't know what people are thinking like that.
Melvin says he didn't hurt Christina, but part of the reason people may be questioning him is because of the human skull found near his property. Melvin tells me he was home the day Lydell found it, and he went down to see it himself.
What was your reaction when you saw the skull?
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know, my body got, something just came over my body that got weak. But I pray that wasn't her.
Like, what do you think happened?
At this point, I really don't know, but I hope she's alive and we're safe, you know?
Melvin was there the night Christina was last seen, and I hoped he would have some new information, another lead that could help explain her disappearance. He doesn't. But there is one other person I want to ask him about.
What about, do you know her son, Evan?
Yeah.
What was their relationship like?
Their relationship was good until she met another guy. What was his name? I forgot his name.
Oye or Wyatt?
Yeah, Wyatt. That day they were here, they were arguing all day. I think it was because she was hanging out with Wyatt and Evan didn't like it.
Melvin was there the day Wyatt died. He remembers Christina, Evan, and Wyatt were all hanging out in her room. He could hear them arguing.
I was in the living room watching TV. I told him to keep the noise down and everybody needs to calm down. And then, you know, I heard a couple of shots and Wyatt came walking and collapsed on the living room floor. He was already gone when I got up and looked at him.
Oh, no. What happened next?
They came out and they freaked out. And I don't know, they were just all hysterical. And Christina took off and they both took off. And I was looking for them outside. It was that night. I don't know where they went. So I was here by myself. And the wife on the floor.
Oh my gosh.
Melvin says his phone wasn't working, so he went over to a neighbor's house to call the police. When they arrived, they interviewed Melvin and took Wyatt's body away.
And I told Evan, came back. I told him, dude, man, you gotta face up. You just kill your own friend. You gotta know.
So you said to him, like, you shot your friend, and he admitted to shooting Wyatt?
Yeah.
And how did he seem? Like, was he upset or what was he like?
He had no expression on his face. Like, he didn't believe what he just did, that he killed somebody. And I was like, dang, dude, you got to do that.
Melvin says Evan took a shower and was sitting in Christina's room when the police returned.
They were calling his name on the PA outside. They kept telling him to come out. They had the house around it. Finally, he came out. Then they took him into custody. That was the last time I seen Evan.
Melvin doesn't know how long Evan stayed in jail. He says they haven't really been in touch since the shooting.
That must have been so hard for Christina. Because Wyatt was someone she was dating, right? That was her boyfriend?
Yes, they were dating.
What did you think of Wyatt?
He was a nice guy. That time he stopped by, he gave everyone a hug. Everybody. He didn't deserve to die that way.
And do you know if Evan's ever done anything else that the police would be looking for him for?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Since talking with police, it's become clear that they are still looking for Evan. I don't know exactly why, but in the course of reporting this story, I've learned Evan is part of a cycle of violence, a family feud that stretches back to even before he was born, and links the lives of both Christina Carrillo and Elamé Begay in a way we never expected. And it all started one day over 20 years ago on a small dirt road in the Carrizo Mountains just above Sweetwater. I'm Connie Walker, and from Spotify, this is Stolen, Trouble in Sweetwater.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush. which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money, up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Are you okay talking about that day when you were 7 years old? Is that something that would be okay for me to ask about?
I'm all ears, man. What I can say is it made me who I am today. I've survived that. Yes.
Quentin Holloway remembers it started like any other day. It was late July in 2001. His mom woke him up and told him to get dressed. They were going up the mountain to bale hay.
I remember waking up. I remember what clothes I picked out. I remember being at my grandmother's house that morning. Let's just put it this way. I remember that whole day.
Quentin was just a little boy. He shouldn't remember this day so clearly, but everything about it seemed seared into his memory.
I had on a pair of blue jeans, brand new denim blue jeans, and I had on a white shirt to match with my Air Force One.
Quentin was 7 years old at the time and lived in Sweetwater with his mom, Teresa Wagon, and his grandparents, Pauline and Milton Wagon Sr. His mom borrowed his grandpa's truck for the day to go up to the family farm in the Carrizo Mountains.
We live right next to the mountain, and we have a cornfield up there.
Quentin's uncle, Milton Wagon Jr., was there too, along with a few of their cousins and his mom's new boyfriend, Cajo Holiday. Quentin played in the cornfield while the adults did some farm work, but mostly he remembers them drinking. They had a case of 40s, and by the time the sun began to set behind the mountain, the beer was gone. Teresa, Cajo, Milton, and Quentin all climbed back into their lime green truck for the short drive home.
There's only one road that goes up and down from that mountain ridge, and that road is only like, 5 feet wide. This is like on the side of a ledge.
Quentin said the dirt road down the mountain was steep, without any guardrails.
If you slide off, you're going to pummel off about a good 100 feet, maybe.
Quentin remembers being squeezed in the front seat between the adults, going down the narrow road, when his mom suddenly slammed on the brakes.
This guy, he was coming from the opposite direction. He pulled up real fast, and he almost hit us. We would have went sliding and flying off that cliff part.
Both vehicles stopped in the middle of the road. Quentin's mom and the other driver got out and started arguing.
He tried to apologize, but then when he tried to apologize in the Navajo way, when you say in the Navajo language, the way it comes off, it sounds offensive. The way it rolls off their tongue was saying, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it like that. Calm down. It sounds like they're offending the other person.
Oh.
Quentin says this chance encounter quickly turned into a heated argument about who had a right to be on the mountain, who had land here, and who didn't. In all the chaos, one thing sticks out in Quentin's mind.
You know, honestly, I remember his face, like, clear as day. I was a little kid, and all he ever said was, sorry, he didn't mean it.
Quentin didn't recognize the man, but he would later learn his name. It was Benjamin Begay, Ellamy Begay's husband.
And then in the middle of the altercation, he took off, peeled out.
The wagons chased Benjamin down the road.
And then we ended up in a pursuit following him. And at this point, I just hear who I'm with in the vehicle say, don't lose him.
Benjamin tried to lose them, but he couldn't. Quentin watched it all from the front seat of the truck. He saw Benjamin pull off the road into a driveway. It was his sister's house. That's when Milton and Keijo got out of their truck and attacked Benjamin. Benjamin's sister came out of the house holding a baby. Teresa yelled at her that if she called the police, she and her brother would burn her house down.
And I'm in the vehicle. If someone don't get up, I can see everything. It just happened right then and there.
Quentin saw them hit and kick Benjamin again and again. And after it was all over, he saw Benjamin's body lying on the ground as they drove away.
In my mind, at that point, I'm just like, is that guy okay? Like, did they really just do that? In my mind, I'm thinking, I want to go back to see his home. When I try to ask about it, all I'm told is, shut up. And I'm just like, okay. Because I'm a little kid, I didn't know what was going on, but I just knew that there was somebody hurt, and I just didn't feel right about it.
So I guess my mom got there and my dad was still kind of breathing and still alive. And, you know, she sat there until he died.
Benjamin and Ella Mae's son, Gerald Begay, was living in Denver when he got word about what happened.
I went straight home, packed my stuff and drove. You know, I drove for 8 hours. That was the longest drive of my life.
Gerald says the whole time he had one thing on his mind.
I was 21 years old, 22. So my whole thinking on the whole thing was retaliation. I already knew who these people were. I knew where they lived. I knew who all the relatives, family members, even their dogs.
Gerald wanted revenge. He wanted to hurt the Wagons the way he was hurting. But before he got the chance, they were arrested. Quentin's mom, Teresa, pleaded guilty to tampering with a witness and was sentenced to 3 years in prison. Her brother, Milton, also took a plea deal for voluntary manslaughter and was sentenced to 6.5 years. The only person to go to trial was Teresa's boyfriend, Keijo Holiday. He was convicted of involuntary manslaughter. Ella Mae spoke at the sentencing. It was held at a federal courthouse over 300 miles away from Sweetwater. She told the judge Benjamin was a loving person among people that truly have known him. She said he had an accomplished mind and a comfortable and warm sense of being. Ella Mae said she was with her husband just before he drove up the mountain. He was going to get water. She said, "My whole life has changed by the death of my husband. The event that has led to his death makes me angry and hateful to those people that killed him. It feels like the anger and sorrow in my heart will never fade." Ella Mae begged the judge to give Keijo the highest possible sentence. She said, "It will not ease the pain on my part, but for Benjamin." In the end, Keijo was sentenced to just over 5 years in prison.
You know, that should be a life sentence. It's kind of like getting a slap on the wrist for killing someone.
It didn't feel like justice to Gerald and set the stage for more tension between the two families, who, despite the bad blood, still lived as neighbors in Sweetwater.
It's this big old circle, this vicious circle that we can't get out of. We can't stop. You know, like I said, it's retaliation is always there. A lot of times that's the number one thing people always think of. You know, sooner or later, someone is going to be at the wrong place, wrong time. You know, unfortunately, we can't predict that, but it's going to happen. You know, it might be sooner or it might be later.
Not long after Benjamin was killed, a child was born in Sweetwater to the Begay family. His grandmother was Ella Mae's cousin. His mother was Christina Carrillo. And his name was Evan Begay.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Want to temporarily restore definition in your jawline where it's been lost over time? With Juvederm Volux XC, you can get a non-surgical jawline treatment that adds volume for a smooth contour and to reduce the appearance of jowls in one in-office treatment with little downtime. Juvederm Volux XC injectable gel is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's J-U-V-E-D. Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergic to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan family killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
So this is Sweetwater.
Mm-hmm. This is the community of Sweetwater.
I'm in the car with Supervisor Dale West, head of criminal investigations for the Shiprock District. We're driving on a small dirt road when he suddenly hits the gas.
Both?
Oh my God. Holy shit.
So just to get you a feel, like when you're running on an emergency to get where?
Yeah,
somewhere,
okay.
Your adrenaline is pumped up there. And I'm only going 35 miles per hour, right?
Yeah.
When we spoke on the phone, Supervisor West told me he won't talk about any open cases. But I wanted to spend time with him today because I'm hoping he'll tell me more about why he's looking for Evan Begay.
When we were chatting last time, I asked about Evan Begay, and you were seemed really interested in him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you ever find him yet?
Is it because, is there like a warrant out for his arrest or something? That's not something you can't say. Because why else would you be interested in talking to him?
No, it's... Obviously, Evan is associated with a case that we're investigating, so we definitely need to talk to him about some things.
Supervisor West won't say which case he's talking about, but I wonder if it has to do with Wyatt's shooting. Evan was charged with criminal homicide in tribal court. Although the charges were dismissed, the documents mentioned an ongoing federal investigation, and that's always raised questions for me. There are two court systems here, the Navajo Tribal Court, which mostly handles minor crimes and can only sentence up to a year in jail, and federal court, which has jurisdiction over major crimes on the reservation.
We have to do a lot of work in order to charge federally. And right now, I just don't have the manpower. It's pretty common for a federal case to go 3 to 5 years before we get it resolved.
Supervisor West is speaking generally, but it's helping me understand that even though Evan's tribal court case was dismissed, he could still be charged in Wyatt's death in federal court.
You know, like Evan's mom's missing as well, Christina Carrillo.
From where?
From Shiprock.
Oh, from Shiprock?
Yeah.
I tell him I'm surprised he doesn't remember Christina's case, because the last time we talked... He told me that criminal investigators were looking into it.
I mean, we just have so many cases, and I hate to say it, but I can't keep them all straight.
Supervisor West says the reality of crime on the Navajo Nation is staggering, and they can't keep up.
A lot of our cases, unfortunately, get resolved because the offender dies. They either take their life or somebody else takes their life. And that's how we close out a lot of our cases.
Supervisor West is saying that in many of their cases, the suspect's death comes faster than a conviction. As we drive, I can see the mountains in the distance, where Ella Mae's husband lost his life.
Somewhere on the Carrizo Mountains was where he was killed.
Hmm. Yeah, just right in this area.
Do you know where the wagons live?
I should know.
Yeah.
But I don't remember off the top of my head.
I look out the window. It's so quiet and peaceful. But I know there's a dark history here, too. It started up in the mountains more than 20 years ago. But the feud between the wagons and the Begays didn't end there.
But when Ella Mae went missing, you know, I don't know where she's at or whatever. I don't know anything about that. But when I heard about it, I'm not going to lie. What came to my mind was karma is a fucking bitch.
Quentin tells me that after Ella Mae went missing, people in the community pointed fingers at his family, the Wagons, thinking they had something to do with her disappearance. He says they didn't, but he knows why people were thinking that. It's because of something that happened in September of 2019, nearly two decades after Benjamin's murder. Quentin got a phone call with terrible news.
I came home to my whole family in the emergency room in surgery.
Oh my God.
My aunt, my grandma, my two nephews.
Quentin's family had been awoken in the middle of the night by men armed with bats and a machete. The intruders assaulted and terrorized his family. And his grandfather, Milton Wagon Sr., was beaten to death.
I had to identify my grandpa's body. But I didn't recognize my grandpa. How the fuck am I going to identify a body that I don't even recognize? The only way I knew it was him is because he was in his house. I had to walk in my grandparents' house, everything broken, blood everywhere on the floor, broken holes. They torched the hall. They torched my bedroom roof. They tried to burn down the house.
Quentin's grandmother told law enforcement that she knew all of the attackers. They were young men from the Begay family. And she said she knew why they were there. It was a retaliation for the killing of their grandfather, Benjamin Begay.
I would give anything to have my grandfather back because he didn't deserve what he went through. None of my family did.
Who were they? Who was there? Who did this?
It's Armando Shonovan and a younger kid named Evan Begay.
We've been asking whether retaliation was part of Christina's story, and it turns out that it is, but not in the way we imagined. 18 years after Ella Mae's husband was killed, Christina's son, Evan, took part in a deadly act of retaliation to avenge his death. We chose to look into Christina and Ella Mae's cases because their investigations were getting such different treatment, and on the surface, they couldn't be more different. A quiet elder who spent her days weaving and a bold younger woman who carried weapons everywhere she went. We never expected Ella Mae and Christina to be linked by family and also by tragedy. Christina's sister Denise read about the Wagon home invasion and the murder of Milton Wagon Sr. in the Navajo Times.
My cousin Isaac was like, Evan got in trouble. Evan killed somebody or something like that, he said. And I was like, what? And he sent me the link. It didn't have a picture of him or anything like that, but it said his name, Evan Begay. So it was like, oh my God. I was freaked out. You don't want to hear about your family doing something like that, especially to the elderly. Like, it's awful.
Did he go to jail for it?
I don't think he did. I think because he was a minor, he got away with it.
Evan was just 5 days shy of his 18th birthday. Because he was a minor, we can't access his records. But his cousins, Shaunavan Curley and Armando White Rock, were 18 and 20 years old at the time. They were convicted of second-degree murder and are serving out sentences of 27 and 25 years in federal prison. Their court records describe a juvenile as being the most violent perpetrator in the attack. The juvenile was seen stabbing Quentin's teenage nephew with a 12-inch long blade and hitting Milton Sr. in the head with a baseball bat. And one of the documents reveals that juvenile is Evan Begay. It's unclear if Evan was ever charged in federal or tribal court, but if he did serve time, it wasn't for long. 2 years later, he was in Shiprock, where he shot and killed his mom's boyfriend, Wyatt Begay. In trying to figure out what happened to Christina, we've uncovered two violent deaths that her son Evan was involved with, killings that raise troubling questions about the very nature of justice here.
Some people I spoke to said the phrase, you can get away with murder on the Navajo Nation. What do you think about that?
I've heard that before in numerous investigations.
My producer, Anya, called up Michael Henderson again, the director of criminal investigations for the Navajo Nation.
I understand where they're coming from. I mean, they're not entirely false as to what they're saying.
Director Henderson tells us a lot of these problems can be traced back to a single crime that happened in 1881. A Sioux chief named Crow Dog shot and killed another chief named Spotted Tail in what is now South Dakota. Since both men were Lakota and the killing took place on their reservation, the tribe handled it internally. According to their customs, Crow Dog was ordered to pay restitution to help take care of Spotted Tail's family. $600, 8 horses, and 1 blanket. But when U.S. authorities got word of this, they weren't happy. Spotted Tail had been a valuable ally to the American government. So they decided for the first time in the history of the country to prosecute what they called Indian on Indian crime and to try Crow Dog for Spotted Tail's murder. Crow Dog was found guilty and ordered to be hanged, but the case made its way to the Supreme Court. The justices upheld the tribe's sovereignty over the case, which set Crow Dog free. In response, Congress passed a new law that gave them more control over justice on reservations, called the Major Crimes Act of 1885.
All those decisions that have been made on these cases impact our policies on the way we decide who takes lead on a case.
Because of the Major Crimes Act, if a serious crime like a murder occurs on the reservation, an FBI agent and a Navajo Nation criminal investigator are assigned to the case. But by law, the FBI agent is in charge. Henderson thinks it should be the other way around.
I think that we have more invested in investigating these things than the FBI does. You know, our criminal investigators here, they live here, they grow up here, they went to school here, they have family here. Not only do they know the language, the culture, and the area, there's also the clanship. They're brothers and sisters.
Director Henderson says the FBI assigns about a dozen agents to the Navajo Nation. He says most of them are young and new on the job, and sometimes they rush their investigations.
I mean, I'm not trying to degrade or downgrade the FBI. It's just that they don't seem to want to do a full-blown-out investigation like they should. They just call the U.S. Attorney's Office and say, hey, this is what I have, and this is what I don't have, and they just get it declined over the phone. I just don't agree with that.
U.S. attorneys declined to prosecute a lot of cases on the Navajo Nation, largely citing lack of evidence. Director Henderson says that putting power in the hands of agents, lawyers, and judges who aren't from here and don't live here contributes to the lack of justice on the reservation. Navajo Nation tribal leaders say they're fed up with tolerating a second-rate judicial system. Every year, they plead with Congress for more funding and action. But what they get is never enough. The federal government is responsible for public safety and criminal justice on the Navajo Nation and has declared missing and murdered Indigenous people a crisis. But when we asked how many missing persons cases the FBI is looking into, Director Henderson said that out of 81 cases, the FBI is investigating just two. For the rest, it's largely up to overworked patrol officers and the victims' families to try to uncover evidence of a crime. And someone did come across something suspicious, the human skull found not far from Melvin Lee's house. We don't know if it's connected to Christina or if there's more evidence out there, but we want to find out.
Hello?
Oh, hey, Melvin. It's Connie calling again.
Okay.
I was just wondering, like, we did a search with this woman who runs a search and rescue group, and she has two dogs that she takes on her searches, and they're trained to find remains.
Ah.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, what do you think about, like, if we could ask her to search, like, your property where that skull was found?
That'd be fine.
You'd be okay with that?
Sure.
Next time, on the final episode of Stolen, Trouble in Sweetwater.
He knows that today we're looking for remains. Ready, bud? Let's go.
Like, I heard he was out of jail, and my mindset was I want to do the same thing to him, like one of his family members.
And someone who has listened to the podcast doesn't like what he's hearing.
Because most of it's lies.
Oh, really? What was the lie?
Oh, the whole thing's a lie. Bullshit.
Stolen Trouble in Sweetwater is a Spotify original production. The show is hosted and reported by me, Connie Walker. Reporting and producing by Ellen Frankman, Max Green, and Anya Schultz. Our supervising producers are Ellen Frankman and Max Green. Additional reporting and production by Chantal Bell-Richard, Audrey Quinn, and Kat Shuknecht. Our reporting was supported by the International Women's Media Foundation's Fund for Indigenous Journalists, reporting on missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, Two-Spirit, and transgender people. Our editor is Audrey Quinn. Our consulting editor is Heather Evans. Additional editorial support from Naomi Barr, Lori Siegel, and Lauren Silverman. Special thanks to Dr. Sunny Clotis-Chiligi. Fact-checking by Naomi Barr. Original music by Hannes Brown, Connor Chi, and Emma Munger. Scoring, sound design, and mixing by Bumi Hidaka. Legal support from Brian Smith and Rachel Strom. Rights and clearances by Jonah Delso and Isabel LaRue. If you or someone you know is dealing with physical or sexual violence, you can find resources in your area by going to spotify.com/stolen. Thank you for listening.